Before I present our speakers, I want to call to your attention the bulletin that was prepared today. There's quite a bit of wonderful information in there for persons who may be in a domestic violence situation, that there is help available, and I wanted to call that to your attention. The Center for Hope and Safety, formerly Shelter Our Sisters, and there's several other places that's listed in your bulletin. There's statistics about domestic violence in your bulletin as well that are called to your attention. While we're sitting here, Reverend Hilton received an email that Dr. W. Franklin Richardson's mother died, and her funeral will be Tuesday at Grace Baptist Church in Mount Vernon, I think like 10 o'clock in the morning. But you might want to call the church to get specifics. And also, I want you to pray for me, my earliest childhood friend. When I was about 5 or 4 years old, I remember Thomas Harris. He has died some years ago, but his mom died. Margaret Harris lives in Philadelphia, and her funeral will be on Tuesday down in Philly. I plan to go. How many of you remember your earliest childhood friend? You know, when you were like 5 or 6 years old, you were bosom buddies. I can remember asking my grandmother after we would be playing, I would want to go a piece of the way home with him. He would walk home, and Deacon Brown used to talk about that all the time. I think it was Deacon Brown, wasn't it? A piece of the way. And so means that we were so tight, I knew I couldn't go and spend the night with him, but I just want to go piece the way home, walk him halfway home, and then come back. So I bless his memory today. Thomas Harris, my childhood friend, and his mom has gone on to be with him already, because he'd already gone, died some years ago in Philly. So it's my pleasure now to introduce to you and present this young woman who, long before I met her, I saw her works, her T-shirt that she had designed at the male choruses concert maybe a month ago, whatever it was. I saw this gentleman with this T-shirt on, and I asked him, you know, where'd you get this shirt? And he said, well, you know, I can't remember the woman's name right now or the number, but I'll get it to you, because I said, I really like that shirt. So true to his word, he contacted Keisha, and she called me. We had an appointment, and she came, and, you know, I was just so impressed by her. She's written several books. I was looking for the book. Oh, it's under there. She's written several books. She is a very creative person. And she's got one book here. I don't think she has, she said these didn't arrive yet, but the basics, what you need to know about teen dating violence. How many of you know sometimes this violence starts in teen, look at somebody and say, if he's trying to beat you and control you as a teenager, get rid of him. Amen? If he dares to lay his hand, you don't need to be hooked up with somebody who's beating you. In fact, you don't need to be hooked up with nobody beating you, period. But, you know, if you're not married or whatever. So she's written this book. I don't think we won't have any of those. Not today, but she'll get us some. She'll get us some. And then she's written this other book. I've never seen a book like this one, you know. The title of the book is Healing My Soul. And then she's on the cover, upside down. So I said to her, this is a mistake. This must be a misprint. Did you know that? She said, yeah, I knew that. My life was upside down. And that's why I had it, you know, printed upside down. Would you join me, please, in welcoming this wonderful young woman who's going to talk to us about domestic violence and three generations. Her grandmother was abused, her mother was abused, and she was abused. Please welcome Keisha Stowe Spence. Please come. Following her, Deacon Dow will talk to us about the legal perspective of abuse. Amen.
Please bear with me. I hope that by me sharing my testimony, that if there is someone here being victimized by domestic abuse, just know that there is a way out. I stand before you today not as a therapist or a psychiatrist or to speak to you about a topic that I have studied or did research on. I'm not going to give you some statistics and facts on domestic violence, what it is or whom it affects. Honestly, I feel that 99% of the human population is blessed with the common sense of knowing what is good for us and what is not good for us. Whatever the reason may be, lack of self-love, fear of your life, finances, your children, not wanting to be alone. I can go on, but I'm not. What the reason for why one tends to remain victim of domestic abuse is that individual's particular stronghold that is keeping them from being victor. I stand here to share my personal experience, my journey of being a victim of domestic abuse, and the steps I have taken to free myself from being a victim. My journey began way before I was even a thought. Elizabeth May Eady, my grandmother, lost her life on June 10, 1951, when her husband decided to stab her in her heart with a knife, killing her instantly. My grandmother was 25 years old at the time of her death, a mother of a 7-year-old son, a 5-year-old daughter who happened to be my mom, as well as an 8-month-old daughter. Carolyn Eady, my mom, after living with her foster parents for 17 years, she relocated to New Jersey. Soon after her arrival, she met my father, Kenneth Stowe. They married within a few months. The night of their wedding, her abuse began. During the 13-year marriage, my mom endured countless beatings, many rapes. She was isolated from others, not to mention the many attempts on her life, to name a few. To get a better concept of our life with Kenna, watch the movie entitled The Burning Bed, starring Farrah Fawcett. The only difference between that movie and our life is that my mom did not kill my dad. We fled for our lives 12 a.m. one morning, with all we could take in black trash bags when my dad left for his second shift job. August 19, 2000, my 30th birthday, I said I do to a man that promised to love, protect, and honor so long as we both shall live. 2 weeks after our wedding, my husband shared with me he did not want to be married. He continued to say he only went through with the marriage because he did not want to lose the money we had spent on our wedding. As you can imagine, as this was truly upsetting to me, especially being that I asked my husband 2 weeks prior to our wedding if this was something he really wanted, because I take the unity of marriage very seriously. Needless to say, I explained to him that I was not leaving. From that point, he continued to do what he wanted to do, including attending the strip clubs every weekend, not returning home until the next morning, engaging in phone conversations with female friends, allowing some of those female friends to disrespect me and not say a word to them. On May 2001, the birth of our son, along with the promise that he was going to stop his foolishness, the change lasted every bit of 2 months. Then it was back to the old routine, not coming home and spending every weekend at the clubs. Constant phone calls from other women. During all this nonsense, he continued telling me that he did not love me, he would not be here. 2013, first physical attack. The first time the abuse became physical. Just another day, what I call normal in the Spence household. my husband hanging out with his friends in our basement. I called downstairs for the fourth time in a matter of 3 hours, requesting that my husband go to the store to buy our son some Pampers. We had not one Pamper in the household, and our child was soaked. After some few choice of words, he finally proceeded to the store to pick up a bag of Pampers. He returned home into our bedroom, where my 20-month-old child and I were laying in bed, and threw the bag of Pampers at me, hitting me directly in the stomach. I was 5 months pregnant with our second son. 2003 through 2005, verbal abuse and psychological abuse was my husband's abuse of choice. My husband reminded me on a day-to-day basis, one, he did not love me, two, he only loved our son, and three, he mistreats me so that I would leave. Let's not forget the constant relationships he was indulging in outside of our marriage. 2006, I was arrested for the first time in my life for defending myself during a physical altercation with my husband, who had delivered the first blow, followed by him punching me to the floor, kicking me in the face as our children watched crying uncontrollably. 2007, I will never question my woman's intuition again. Proof of my husband's infidelity. Not one, but two STDs found during a routine pap test. One treatable and the other we will have for the rest of our lives. I am truly grateful it was not HIV or AIDS. 2009, my husband. 2007, my husband attempted to take my life early one morning by strangulation. Quick thinking on my part by pretending to play dead was the only thing that saved my life. My husband was arrested for terroristic threat and spent 14 days. He was released after I posted bail. That too was not enough for me to leave. June 18, 2009, after about a week prior of arguing and a few shoves of forceful grabbing on my husband's part and me many sleepless nights and me contemplating in my mind how I was going to get rid of him, gave me the courage and the strength to follow in my mom's footsteps. I grabbed everything I could, placed them in black trash bags, and fled to PA with my sons. There is nothing, I mean nothing, worth the sacrifice of your inner peace. The accomplishments and the woman I have become within the past 5 years of me freeing myself could not be had I continued allowing myself to be a victim of domestic violence. I have learned that sometimes relationships, including friendships, as well as marriages, have an expiration date, especially relationships dealing with domestic abuse. Only you can put an expiration date on your abuse. I am honored and I am truly blessed that I stand here before you, able to give you out of my own mouth, not in the obituary next to my date of birth, June 18, 2009, the day my abuse expired. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Giving honor to God, Pastor Jackson, the ministerial staff, officers and members and friends of Mount Olive Baptist Church. Over the past few weeks, the headlines have been full of reports about Ray Rice, the former Rutgers and Baltimore Ravens star running back, and several other NFL players who have been accused of domestic violence against their wives and girlfriends. As a graduate of Rutgers Law School, I must say that Ray Rice was a hero to me and to millions of other Rutgers graduates and football fans throughout the country. We watched with horror when Ray delivered the knockout left hook to his wife's, or rather his fiancée's head, rendering her unconscious and then dragging her out of the elevator like a piece of sack of potatoes and just dropping her there. To be sure, domestic violence did not begin with the NFL, and certainly it will not end with the NFL. Domestic violence is as old as the scriptures. When Cain killed Abel, it was the oldest case of domestic violence recorded in the fourth chapter of Genesis. What is new are the laws recently enacted to prohibit domestic violence, protect the most vulnerable victims, and to punish the perpetrators who beat, torture, and kill their wives, girlfriends, mothers, grandmothers, sisters, aunts, and children. It would not be an exaggeration to say that we are experiencing an epidemic of domestic violence, despite the enactment of laws in New Jersey to prevent it. We should begin our discussion by asking the simple question, why do we have laws and what's the purpose of having laws? The answer is very simple. We have laws to prevent the strong, the powerful, the rich, and the influential from devouring, destroying, killing, injuring, and maiming the weak, the poor, the elderly, and the most vulnerable members of our community. New Jersey enacted its Prevention of Domestic Violence Act in November of 1991, which is almost 23 years ago to this month. At the time the law was enacted, women, especially pregnant women, were being beaten, tortured, and killed at an alarming rate, usually after the police had been called to the scene, investigated the complaint, and then left the scene without making an arrest of the alleged perpetrator. That's right. Before 1991, if the victim was fortunate enough to be able to call the police before being injured or killed, all the enraged husband or boyfriend had to do was to wait for the police to leave, and then he could inflict the dastardly acts of injuring, maiming, or killing his spouse or his girlfriend. All of that changed with New Jersey's adoption of the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act. From the date that the law was enacted, if the police are called to the scene of a complaint of domestic violence, and if they find visible evidence of injury, the police are required by law to arrest the person they believe to be responsible for causing the injury. If the police fail to make an arrest after discovering visible evidence of injury, then the police officer may be held liable to the victim for negligence in failing to exercise his duty. In order to invoke the provisions of the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act, one of the following predicate offenses would have to occur and a complaint made to the police by the victim: homicide, assault, terroristic threats, kidnapping, criminal restraint, false imprisonment, sexual assault, criminal sexual assault, lewdness, criminal mischief, burglary, criminal trespass, harassment, or stalking. As a result of the Ray Rice incident, there are now bills pending in the New Jersey legislature that would expand the list of predicate crimes that form the basis for a domestic violence arrest. Those new offenses would be robbery, contempt of court, and criminal coercion. Furthermore, as a direct result of the Ray Rice attack on his then fiancée, under the new bill pending in the legislature, a man or woman charged with domestic violence would no longer be eligible for the pretrial intervention program, commonly known as PTI, which was intended for the first-time nonviolent offenders. After the successful completion of the program, under the old law, the charges would be dismissed after a year if the person stayed out of trouble. Under the proposed law now pending in the legislature, thanks to Ray Rice, a first-time domestic violence offender would no longer be eligible for the PTI program. Most of the cases of domestic violence that I see are fueled by alcohol, illegal drugs, or uncontrolled anger, or a combination of all three. The Inglewood police usually call me at home between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. They do not call me during regular business hours. I'm usually asleep. But I get all my calls between that time, usually by an aggrieved woman for a temporary restraining order. I should note that domestic violence cases are so prevalent that judges are authorized to issue restraining orders without giving the husband or the boyfriend notice or an opportunity for a hearing. This is an extraordinary exception to the due process clause of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution because of the emergency nature of the application. Furthermore, many of these domestic violence cases occur in the presence of children. I have heard cases in which the mother was assaulted by her husband or boyfriend while pregnant or holding an infant. Domestic violence attacks in the presence of children begin the process of desensitizing children to the acts of violence, and if you add to this process violent video games and movies that sensationalize violence, it should come as no surprise that young boys have no problem picking up a gun and randomly shooting into a crowd and killing innocent victims, such as the two young ladies who were recently killed in Paterson, New Jersey. Let me address the men who are present, most of whom I'm sure are not domestic violence offenders. You know, when we were born, God gave us a kit with some tools in it. There are quite a number of tools in that kit. There's a tool for love, there's a tool for forgiveness, there's a tool for self-discipline, and down in the real tight area in the bottom of that kit, there's a tool called sense of humor. Most people don't realize the value of having a sense of humor. I'm not talking about the kind of sense of humor that makes somebody else the subject of the joke. I'm talking about self-deprecating humor in which you're willing to talk about yourself or be the object of the joke. I've been married for about 44 years. My wife has never hit me, and I've never hit her. We use humor sometimes to diffuse the tension. On a number of occasions, she's called me an idiot. And I tell her, well, at least I was smart enough to marry you. Her reply is, you're a genius. The good news, if there can be any good news, is that the perpetrators of domestic violence can now be held accountable for their crimes. The bad news for husbands and boyfriends is that they will change their location from a warm bed in a clean house or apartment to a cold jail cell surrounded by bars and be forced to live with other violent offenders. The other part of the good news is that the perpetrators of domestic violence can be changed from wife beaters and child abusers to loving husbands and boyfriends through prayer, anger management counseling, and the power of the Holy Spirit. As you know, everybody in the church used to be something else. After all, we are all sinners saved by grace. Jesus Christ can transform a hopelessly addicted drug addict into a devoted deacon. He can change a prostitute into a motivated missionary. And if Christ can do that, he can change the heart of an abusive husband or boyfriend into a supportive, loving, and peaceful disciple of Christ. When counseling and prayerful support by the body of Christ is used, we can help to change what looks like the hopelessness of uncontrolled domestic violence into strong families so that God would get the glory out of our lives. God bless you.
Thank you, Deacon Dow. Thank you, Keisha. Hear now the word of God. John's Gospel, chapter 5, beginning at verse number 1. Afterward, Jesus returned to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy days. And inside the city, near the sheep gate, was a pool of Bethesda with five covered porches. Crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. And one of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. When Jesus saw him. He knew that he had been ill for a long time. He asked him, "Would you like to get well?" "I can't, sir," the sick man said, "for I have no one to put me in the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me." And Jesus told him, "Stand up, pick up your mat, and walk." Instantly, the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. But this miracle happened on the Sabbath. So the Jewish leaders objected. They said to the man who was cured, "You can't work on the Sabbath. The law doesn't allow you to carry that sleeping mat." But he replied, "The man who healed me told me, 'Pick up your bed and walk.'" "Who said such a thing as that?" they demanded. The man did not know, for Jesus had disappeared into the crowd. But afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and told him, "Now you are well, so stop sinning, or something even worse may happen to you." Then the man went and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had healed him. Amen. I want to talk about it's not too late for a blessing. It's not too late for a blessing. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem to celebrate one of the holy days, Passover, Pentecost, or the Tabernacles, Feast of Tabernacles. We don't know which day it is, but there was a law that any male, adult male that lived within 15 to 20 miles of Jerusalem were required to go to the holy days. Excuse me, give me some water. To the holy days. And as Jesus goes in downtown Jerusalem, he goes to the pool called Bethesda. And at this pool, there were sick people. They didn't have any hospital. They didn't have any Hackensack Hospital. They didn't have a Holy Name or Inglewood Hospital. But the sick people gathered at this pool. They didn't have a Bergen Regional. They didn't have these rehabilitation centers. So the blind were there. The lame were there. People who had strokes were there. And the text says that many people have been coming there so long till they just get accustomed to being sick around the pool. This one man had been going there for 38 years. And the text would lead us to believe that this man had a physical problem. Maybe he was a quadriplegic. Maybe he was a paraplegic. Maybe he was in a wheelchair. We don't know. But the text suggests that he had a physical disability that prevented him from getting into the pool every time the water was troubled, because there was a tradition when the water was troubled, if you were the first one to get into the pool, you would be healed. But every time he tried to get in the water, somebody beat him in. And how many of you know, you don't have to be a paraplegic in order not to be able to move? You can be so depressed in your mind and in your spirit that you can't even get up out of your seat. Anybody know what I'm talking about?
You don't even feel like getting out of the bed on a sunny day. And I don't care. Marvin Gaye could be singing. You could have all kinds of music going on. The birds can be chirping and you still are not able to move.
This text says that they were around this pool. There were all kind of people there. There were people there. It says the blind was. How many know you can be blind and still be able to see out of your eyes, but your mind is messed up?
How many of you know that you can be crippled and still be walking around? You're crippled by fear, or you're crippled by domestic violence, or you're crippled by all manner of things that get into your psyche, into your spirit, and you are not able to move forward. All you do is just sit there and think about yesterday.
Life can get you into a place where all you think about is just surviving. You wake up the next morning, you say, I just thank God for another day. Anybody ever been there? I just thank God that I'm not at the morgue today. I just thank God that he didn't kill me last night. I just thank God that I didn't kill him last night. I just thank God for one more day.
And we get into a position where we don't even expect God to do anything. Too many of us have become acquainted and accustomed to misery. And we've been miserable so long, we don't even try to get out no more.
Just give me the strength to survive. Just give me the courage to face going home again. I thank God for Sunday morning. Some people are sitting here, I'm just glad that I have some place to go on Sunday morning, that I can get away from the violence and the meanness in my house. I thank God that I can, and there, you know, there's some people in a hurry to get out of church, and there's some people say, preach a little longer.
You don't know what I got to go back to. You don't know the hell that I have at home. And for me, church is a blessing.
Jesus comes into this situation. These sick people are all around. They're at this pool, and there's five porches, and there's one porch over here for the blind. There's one porch over here for the lame. There's one porch over here for the paralyzed. And in my sanctified imagination, I think there's one porch over here for domestically abused women. And Jesus stops by, and he saw some women who had been crippled by fear of the terroristic actions in their own home. And maybe there are also some terrorized men also in the crowd has to deal with domestic violence. Jesus goes there and he checks out the crowd. He looks at this man and he says, he could see, how many of you know that sometimes you can see in a person's disposition that they're miserable, and they've been miserable for a long time. You try to cover it with makeup. Ain't that much makeup in the world. You try to cover it with a nice hair. You're like, I just got to go get my hair done so I can feel better. I got to get my nails done so I can feel better. I got to get nothing on my fingernails. I got to get my it's a me day. And ain't nothing wrong with a me day, but some of us, I don't care how many me days you have, it won't fix what's wrong on the inside. Because we're living with fear. And we're terrorized by fear and isolation and separation and loneliness and miserable. And we've brought our expectations down. We go to church, but we don't expect God to do anything. On this occasion, Jesus sees this man. Who had been by that pool for 38 years. 13,840 days. This guy had been going to the pool. And every day he went for the last 38 years.
somebody always beat him to the blessing. And I can imagine in those 38 days, in those 38 years, there was one day that he almost made it. He thought he was going to get in the pool, and right then some joker pushed somebody ahead of him. And he missed his blessing. How many of you know that sometimes you can be praying so long you just get tired of praying? Jesus showed up on this day. And how the right word from Jesus can change your internal fire. Do I have a witness in that? It might not change your circumstance. It might not change your situation. But the right word at the right time can change your spirit, can change your mind. And it can fortify you on the inside to help you to survive and help you to get up and live a life. Do I have one witness in the house? I just need one word. Just one word. This guy who had been there for 38 years. He had been there longer than Jesus had been alive. Jesus didn't live at 33. This guy had been there for 38 years. Jesus looked at him. I'm looking at y'all right now. Y'all look beautiful. Y'all look handsome. Some of you, I can see in your eyes, you've been through some stuff. And you know, it used to be a time when you talk about people been through some stuff, you start looking at old folk. Hey, young people been through some stuff. Young teenagers, they've been through date rape. They've been through some joker trying to beat up on them because they took them to the movie and brought some popcorn. Get a life, boy. They took you to the movie in their parents' car. Act like they rich and got it all going on. No, you just living on your parents' blessings. Jesus saw something in this man's eye. One word can create a shift. Do I have a witness? You'd have said something to me yesterday, I might have cussed you out, but the one word that I heard from Jesus in church, if you said it to me 2 years ago, we might have been rumbling in the jungle. But because I've heard a word, it allowed me to have a little more spiritual fortitude to stand against the wiles of the devil. What the devil can't stand is when you and I have a word and we allow ourselves to be changed in the presence of God. Devil don't want you to pray no more. Devil don't want you to hope no more. The devil wants you to think, yeah, you've been coming here for 38 years. You'll be coming here another 38 years, and you nothing never going to change. But when Jesus speaks, how often we've had to live. How many of you know that every now and then you have to learn how to live with disappointment? You get married and he promises he's going to love you forever. He promises you, oh, baby. Oh, you're just the best thing ever happened to me. But forever, she said that her mother was abused on the wedding night. Wow. Sometime forever. Love, when it comes to love, sometimes it doesn't last long. Sometimes people need to be encouraged to hope that it's not too late. I know you're into this marriage. I know you've been praying for 38 years. I know you've been coming to the pool here at Mount Olive Baptist Church for the last 10 years. And you used to believe that the Lord's going to do something, but he hadn't done it yet. So now your prayer's been brought down just to the point, Lord, just help me to survive. I used to want to have happiness. Now I just want to keep from killing it. Some people think, hey, Rev, it's too late for me. Young 18-year-old gold girl talking about it's too late for you. I dropped out of high school, too late for me. I got pregnant when I was 16, too late for me. I got hooked on drugs when I was 18, too late for me. Look at somebody say, it's never too late. Don't you give up on God. You take a lesson from this man in the text here. This guy kept going to that pool for nearly 14,000 days. He kept waiting on his blessing. And one day when Jesus showed up, Jesus just said, pick up your bed and walk. And the man started walking. Give God some praise. I want you to look at somebody and say, this is my day. I've been waiting for a blessing. Hey, I ain't mad at you because you got yours a little while, but this is my day right here. I expect the Lord to do something. I'm not satisfied with just surviving. I want the Lord. I want something from the Lord. I came here today. I want something from the Lord. I'm not looking for a lot of old blessing. I'm looking for the Lord to give me peace on the inside. I'm looking for the Lord to heal my body. Is there anybody in here that wants something from the Lord? If you say you want something, tell him, I want something. I might not want what you want, but I got my needs. You know, there's some people who don't want you to express your wants. People who say, well, you know, you don't take all that hollering in church. They just don't know the hell you had to go through. You know, life can get you in a position that you don't care who's looking. Do I have a witness? It's like when you go to a hospital. You know, I've been in a hospital, and you know, when I'm doing good, I'm covering up and pulling the sheets over the bed, pulling the sheets down over me, keeping everything covered. But when I hurt, after I come out of surgery, after they poke it on me, I don't care what you see. I don't care what nurse comes in. I don't care what doctor comes in. Just help me. Do I have a witness? Well, if I want something, and if you hurt bad enough, you got to tell God I want it. Lord, I'm crying out of my pain. I don't care what other church folks say. It's me, oh Lord. Tell him I want it. I want it. I want it. You know, don't tell me that what you want is not important. What you want is important. Because your desires will direct your destiny. Do I have a witness? What you desire. Remember when you just desired her? You desired him? You would, when you desire, how many of you know that you'll find a way to get close to her? Get close to him. How you doing? What's your name again? What sign? Did they still ask that? No. In my day, what sign are you? I don't even believe in signs, but it was Just confident. You find a way for what you desire. You will move towards what you desire, towards your destiny. Do I have a witness in here? And so if you want something from God, don't you be embarrassed to ask God for what you want. How many of you know God is able to give you just what you need? I'm a living witness. Don't you be embarrassed. I want it. I want joy again. I want peace again. I'm tired of surviving. I want the abundant life. If you're going to give him the abundant life, for God's sake, give me the abundant life.
That's something beyond, look at somebody and say, there's something beyond survival. I'm glad, you know, domestic violence, you know, people say, well, I survive, you know. That's good, but I want more than just survival. These people around this pool, let me get back to the text. What in the world, yeah, I can't keep up with my clock. These people around the pool, five porches, blind, crippled, paralyzed. They just went around the pool. They were stuck at the pool. They didn't really expect that today was going to be their day. They just showed up at the pool. They were stuck in their blindness. They were stuck in their lameness. There were no hospitals. The pool was just the holding place. They weren't dead, but they really weren't alive. It's sort of like, you know, a lot of us, we ain't dead, but we ain't been alive in a long time. We just hold it on. We're breath and britches. Let me say that again. Y'all didn't get that. Your breath and britches. Stuck in a place of misery. Every day they just enjoyed being alive. But you know, people who live in catastrophic circumstances, when you're in an abusive relationship and you're scared to lay down to go to sleep, you ain't got time to be cute in church. Do I have a witness? Oh, Lord, I just thank you. But when you are hurting, Lord, I want it. Look at somebody. Say, I want it. I need you right now, Jesus. Have mercy on me right now in the name of Jesus. If you don't kill that rascal, cripple him for a little while. I need you right now.
There's some people who have given up on life. Given up on finding the right mate for them. Been through so much until they don't dream anymore. They just celebrate survival. Another day, another month, another year. There's a pathology that surrounds the pool. You know, one of the worst things in the world, when you're going through something, you just hang around a bunch of people that's going through the same thing you're going through. Just hang around a bunch of other women who are mad at all the men in the world. And then you take on their toxicity along with yours. And then can't nobody stand you because you become your surrounding. Look at somebody, you just say you got to be careful who you surround yourself with. You,
you got to be careful who's around that pool that you are hanging. That's why I like to go to church. We ain't perfect, but I just choose to feel like I'm better off around church folk than I am around folk that hang at the bar every day.
You got to be careful because, you know, if you just hang around people who ain't doing no better than you, you ain't going nowhere. Do I have a witness? If you the smartest one in your group, you in trouble. I used to think like, wow, you know, Mount Olive, boy, they are so good to me. They're sending me off to a conference down in Miami and whatever. They're trying to put me around some positive people so that I can come back with some new ideas. Thanks be to God. Every now and then, you got to get away from your little booze. One thing I like, I try to do this for my kids. I like exposure. I like to expose my kids. That's why Monique goes to wherever she goes. And I don't have a lot of money, but I'll put a little cash. Because I like her to be exposed. I like Michael to be exposed. I like Ashawn to be. I like for them to be exposed. I want them to know that the world is bigger than Hackensack, New Jersey. And if I can't send them to Paris, I want to give them bus fare to New York every night. It's exposure, because you learn some stuff. You need to get away from your little group and your little crowd. Because otherwise, you can be stuck. Jesus stepped into that pool, and he saw this guy who'd been hanging around there for 38 years. Long years hanging around with all of those same sick folk, and that man probably had developed a sick mentality because he'd been around there for almost 14,000 days and he could not get into the pool, and he probably developed this negativity saying, ain't gonna be my day for a blessing. But that day when Jesus stopped by, it was his day that his life would be changed, and this man received the blessing. Look at somebody, this is my day. I'm tired of hanging out on your porch. Remember down in South Carolina? Every house had a porch. We got a porch at our house, but nobody ever sits on it. As a boy, you sit on the porch all the time watching the cars go by. I could recognize a Studebaker back then. I can't even pronounce the name of the cars now. That's why I got a Genesis. You can't run around with angry women and expect to be happy. You can't run around with a bunch of men without a vision and expect to be an overcomer. Nobody likes to be lonely, but you don't want to hang around with all lonely people. You ought to hang around somebody that smiles every now and then. Do I have a witness in the house? You can't run with folk and be totally different from them all the time. You need somebody who's going to lead you to a change. That's why I want you today just think about what you want from God. And I don't want you to be embarrassed. If you need a man, tell him I want it. And don't sit up here talking about me and Jesus are tight. If you need a woman and you're not married, tell him about it. If you need internal peace because you're miserable at home, tell him I want my joy back again. Tell him about it. And if you need a little money in your pocket,
Lord, you know I'm your servant. I'm not necessarily looking for the lotto. I just need enough.
And then there'll be somebody sitting next to you talking about, I just think it's a shame that she was crying out in church like that. Well, maybe you don't need nothing from God. You just hush. There's somebody, that's two or three people in here that came here today. Somebody sitting up in the balcony on the last row. You came here, you just didn't expect anything today. But I want you to know, I want you to tell God, I want it, I want it, I want it. I want something from God. I didn't come in here to go out the same way. I want something from God today, Jesus. Then I want you to hear Jesus say, pick up your bed. Lift up your head. And you know what? In the text, Jesus heals the guy, and all those good-for-nothing church folk could do was complain about the day Jesus healed him. Look at somebody and say, every now and then you just got to break the rules.